Blog Talk Radio.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot. I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive. No big, I feel like Pac. I shoot a shot. I'm coming in. Yeah, coming in hot. Just like the fajita. I write what I live. My life in the speaker. I'm nice with the flow. Just like the demeanor. I'm feeding my fam. I'm feeding the meter. They got the iron while I got the steamer. I bring the fire but you never seen her. I testify I don't need a subpoena. They want my soul, better go to Korea. I love my dog just like I'm Peter. Gotta protect them. I made the call, it was just like I'm reffing. I know we left, yeah, now we back together. But I guess that is better now, later than never. Like, what's happening? I'ma need y'all, quit asking when. Me and my wife gon' have some kids. Right now we just practicing. Practicing. Teacher said quit rapping, man. That gon' hurt my average. I said thank God I ain't average. Yeah, I'm a bright young man. Kill the GPA, and the BPM. Look, we on. So say what you say, cause that's A with Lecrae. From the A train to the A, I'm coming.
Hot.
Coming in hot. Coming in hot.
Coming in hot.
Coming in, coming in, coming in hot.
What up, what up, what up? I miss you guys. I miss y'all. How y'all doing?
Like the gang's all here.
Yes. Oh, man. Yes. Good deal.
Oh, man. Oh, man. We got another show for y'all. We got another show for y'all. What's up, Point Blankers? Before we get into anything, I want to say, folks, I wasn't on the show last week, but I did have a chance to chime in my travels, and I must say, listen, y'all don't know y'all around a strong group of people until you're not around them, and you see how they hold it down. And I must say, my team better than y'all, because last week, Nokia, Y'all held it down, and I was proud, man. And it wasn't nothing shocking. You know, I was like, oh my God, they held it down. But you know, it's one thing to know something, but when you like when you experience it, you're like, yo, my team's strong. So I just want to tell everybody out there that's listening to my Point Blank thing. I'm sorry, y'all. My team better than yours. Have to put it out there. Team better than yours. So.
100. Yeah.
We're gonna let them put it out there. My team better than yours, y'all. But I must say, I do miss y'all. I definitely miss y'all. How the hell have y'all's 2 weeks been? It's been 2 weeks since I spoke to y'all. How's it been?
Oh, I know. It's been crazy. Wow. As crazy as for me.
Yo, for me, crazy it's busy, getting ready. So. Yeah, I'm getting ready to go back to the field. So I won't be here next week. So. But, yeah, other than that, man, coaching football.
Oh, my God.
Yo, speaking of working on something, I just had someone bring me a Taurus, what's it called? It's a revolver. I know. No. That's a good thing.
Okay.
It's called the Protector, the Taurus Protector, right?
The protector is nice.
It's a polymer. Yeah, it has a polymer of a frame, revolvers, 357 mag. Yo, let me tell you something. This right here, this got to go on the collect. Like, no lie. I got to get this gun. Yeah. Yo, the trigger pull, the, you know what I'm saying, like the mechanics of this revolver. Is the only thing that I don't like about it. So let me say that. There's only one thing I don't like about it, and that's that the grip is too small.
It's kind of like the Judge. The Taurus Judge?
Yeah, 100. It is. But it's smaller. This bad boy, I was like, yo. I just kept looking at it. Before I even worked on it, you know what I'm saying? I just kept looking at it like, yo, this right here. This is it right here. Like,
That's hilarious.
Yo, straight up, this is my ankle piece right here. You feel me? Like, I got an EEC.
This is hilarious,
but
y'all.
This right here got to go on the ankle. It got to go around the ankle, bro. I was like, yo.
So basically, now we can get a Taurus endorsement because Elliot's on board, right?
Clap it up.
Clap it up.
Hey, look. I told y'all, I always thought Taurus revolvers were really good. But
yeah, you did.
Yeah, after shooting that G3 though, I was like, ooh, this is kind of nice, right? You know what I'm saying? I ain't having a problem. You know what I mean? So I'm not officially on board till I buy one. When I buy one,
I
say it again, when I buy one, because that G3 really did prove.
I like
much,
that.
Because I want to check out the new one, the G4. Because, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm hearing some really good things about that G4. So.
Wow.
Okay. Well, you know what, E? I'll take that. You know, I think you're feeling
in
right now. I know, right? He does sound like a believer. How he's starting to feel about a Taurus is how I'm starting to feel about, you know, Glock. You know, I'm on my second Glock right now. I got me a Gen 5, Glock 19 Gen 5. And I'm going to say I like the Glock brand. You know, I wasn't big on the whole Glock thing because I didn't want to, you know, I was like, Glock have nothing but fanboys and all this other stupidness. But I must say, I respect the brand. I get it. I completely get it. They're the iPhones of the gun world. You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? That's it. That's one of them things.
100%.
If it's not broke, don't fix it. So, but
I mean,
listen.
I told you, like, I did the shoot, the Canik against the Glock, and my Glock didn't fail. That Canik, malfunctioned 7 times. I was like, wait a minute.
Well, my Canik don't fail, so.
Yeah, my
well, don't be too soon.
My can
don't
fail.
Don't be too soon, because I said the same thing. I said the same thing the first time I took it to the range. I was like, yo, this can is awesome, man. We get it. Hey, look, it was like, for real, it was like, for some reason, when you step up and you got the big boy on the block, and it was like the can got scared. I know that sounds crazy, but it did not perform the way it did the first time at the range. You feel what I'm saying? There wasn't much difference. It wasn't raining. You know, of course, I keep my guns maintenance. You see what I'm saying? So it just didn't perform, and I was really shocked, man. I was like, wow, like, they, you know, same brand ammunition. The Glock is a 40 caliber, you know, and the Canik is a 9mm, and it malfunctioned. It was a misfeed 7 times. The Glock, flawless. And then, when you look on my page, the Glock 40 with a 40 caliber, I shot it more accurately. It was crazy. Same tempo.
Wow.
Yeah, same. I was like, yo. I said, I guess my Glock is like, nah, brother. You ain't just going to be disrespecting me.
Sound like Glock paid another one. That's what it sounds like. Glock paid another one, y'all.
Yeah, I mean, the Glock was really my first pistol. That's the first pistol I purchased. You know what I'm saying? So not the first, actually. It was the first big caliber, I should say. My first alley of
okay.
was a
with the high point. We know the first pistol.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was that ugly high point. You know what? I forgot all about the Frankenstein. I did.
Yep.
I forgot all about that.
I can't let you forget about the high point.
Man,
but
you
know, no one's hating on.
I got one.
Nobody's hating on the Glock though. So the Glock is a good gun. But I do want to know what you did with that daggone high point. I do want to know what you did with that high point.
It's in my safe right now. I don't even know if it needs to be in my safe, to be honest. If someone broke into my house right now, they're not taking that gun. I can tell you that right now.
Nah,
but I put it in my safe. they might replace it for me. They might replace it and give me a Glock. But so what my plan with that is, it's going to be I'm going to do a video. You know, I kind of want to see what all the – not the hype – but I guess the hype, you know, what the hype's about around the High Point series, you know, a lot of
the
High Point is kind of like
wait, there's a hype around it.
The high point is kind of like that really bad movie that has a weird cult following. And there's a lot of people that, like, online that stand by the damn high point. You know? And then there's, the real shooters that they're like, nope, I'm not doing a high point. But every single person that has shot a high point has all said the same thing. When it works, it works. It shoots anything, and it just works, you know? But when you get one that malfunctions, it malfunctions all the damn time. So I want to do a video to kind of not torture test, but kind of torture test, if you guys know what I mean, a high point, just to kind of see
just
for
fire
myself.
It back to back to back to back to back, just fire it back to back to back like that?
Now I'm going to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
A high point is like the Russian-made AK-47. They're both incredibly ugly, okay? But they can literally be, you know, you can drop them in mud and dirt and they'll still work. Now, the problem with most high points in the beginning is that the feed ramp causes malfunctions. When you polish that ramp, it will eliminate that problem. And then you won't have
You know what?
You know what I'm saying?
I've heard that. There's this guy I've seen that. There's a guy on YouTube. I don't remember his name. I will shout him out. But he actually got a Glock, and he said he made the very first group. Not the Glock, I'm sorry. The Glock is in my brain, man. They do that manipulation stuff. But he got a high point, and he did the first Gucci high point, they call it, you know, like after kind of like the Gucci Glock. And that's exactly what he did. He actually polished that feed ramp and did some work to the barrel. And he said he has never had a malfunction. Like his high point, like that is his EDC. As crazy as he is, he has said once he's done that, he's never had a malfunction. You know? So I definitely want to test it out. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I feel like you're about to say something real disrespectful, E.
Nah, a Glock 40 caliber is like carrying an AR pistol on your side. Like, it's just too heavy. It's way too heavy. Like, without question.
You think so?
It is.
Because that's what I have. I have a Glock 40 caliber.
It's
I have
heavy,
the Glock 27.
I don't think I lasted 2 weeks with that. I was like, no, I can't. I can't carry this.
Really?
Thing. There's no way. Yeah. I was like, I can't carry this thing.
But, you know, I can see why you would say that, because your carry is a Smith, isn't it? Like, that's your carry? Is a Smith?
Yeah.
That's why. Because the Smith is definitely lighter than, like, my wife, Shield, was definitely lighter than, is definitely lighter than my 27. So I can definitely see why you would say that.
Yeah, I couldn't have it, man. Ain't no way.
Yeah, but you know what? Once I do this video, I haven't done it yet. I'm thinking probably next week or the week after. I know that the week after, I'm heading to. I think it's the week after. Either the week next week or the week after that, I'm heading to North Carolina to hang out with some lady named Kia. She got this really interesting
some lady.
At some place called Point Blank something. She has a really awesome class that she decided she wanted to do an AR build class, so she went and got the best AR build instructor out there by way of Zach Tactical. I'll say second best, you know, because you do some phenomenal work, so I'll give myself that second best. I mean, or that particular person's second best, sorry.
AR builds, I'm being real with you. AR builds are boring. Like, that's not something.
Oh, dude.
I put that. I just being real with you.
Wait a minute, buddy.
That's minor work.
What'd you say? Look, Dwayne, cut the tape. Go commercial.
Hey, look, that's minor work. Like, I push AR bills because I'm trying, you know, if somebody want to save money and they don't want to spend the MSRP at a store, you feel what I'm saying? They don't want to spend, you know, the money. So they come to me and I'm like, well, yeah, I could do the bill for you, but my bills are not like just your regular AR. It's a full tactical bill, a full, like, fully compatible. You know, when you get yours, you got the sight, it's sighted in, red dot, backup sights, tactical light, you know what I'm saying, adjustable stock or pistol grip, whatever you're looking for, it's complete. But like I said, but unless I'm doing a paint job on it or camo in or something, man, it's just boring. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, all right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's a build. All right.
Well, the funny thing is, I guess it's because, the funny thing is because you're a gunsmith, of course they'll probably warranty, right?
Yeah.
But we have
so
many people are so hyped about this, y'all. Like, it is like, so people are like, oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't wait. You know, I can't wait to go and do this. And then we're going to go to the range and shoot them afterwards. So they're like, oh, my God, we can't wait. And stuff like that.
Look,
so you're a gunsmith who builds guns all the time. I want to say, you know, hey, I'm sure it is boring.
Hey, but I'm going to say this.
I want to say whatever.
There's one thing you have to make sure, because I have to deal with a lot of repairs and issues. Not so much of a repair, but you got to make sure that the gas tube and the gas port, you know what I'm saying, on the gas block, it all lines up properly. Because, you know, if it doesn't, it won't allow the weapon to cycle properly. So I made some decent money because people don't realize that one little thing. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, first of all, Elliot, you should be at the class giving your 2 cents. We don't want your secondhand information because you could have been, you could be there too. So whatever, dude, whatever.
I'll be in training while y'all doing that. So, you know,
yeah, okay. I got you. This time, but you know, he up there poking holes, talking about I was.
Well, you know, Kia, me
I'm
and
like,
you.
Why you not gonna be there?
Kia, me and you, we're gonna have a good old dandy time. We're gonna have a blast.
Yeah, exactly.
And our students, folks, this class is filled to capacity. It's gonna be 55 students. I'm lying. It's not gonna be 55 students. That's our next class.
This
class is gonna be packed to capacity.
But it is.
We're gonna have a blast. We're gonna have fun. It is a full class.
It is a full class.
Sold out in a week and a half, y'all.
Not
even a full week. I think it's probably just a full week. It's sold out.
It's sold out in 4 days.
I'm sending y'all some of my business cards, so you know what I'm saying, just in case they need, you know, they're gonna need my services afterwards, just to be sure, you know.
But you're talking about business cards.
He has
enough. I do need some more. I know. I do need some more business cards because I'm down for the last six. Remember, last time I saw you, you gave me a whole stack, and I'm down to like the last six or seven of those business cards. So I need, I'm going to eventually need some. I'm going to bring those cards to the class, though, because, you know, we're all about cross-branding. Even though we all kind of do the same thing, we all still do something different, and we're going to represent each other. So, you know, E, I'm going to bring your cards to the class. That way, you know, we got a number one gunsmith. Like I said earlier, y'all, my team better than y'all's, okay? We got the number one gunsmith across the country right here, Point Blank Radio.
Ain't nobody like that.
Yeah. So, absolutely. But E, I want to give you all your flowers for last week's show. But before I do that, listen to this. Listen real good. Tell me what this is. What's that?
Sound like you was racking.
You hear that?
AR.
It was a bolt.
Yeah.
It was a bolt, guys. Ladies and gentlemen,
yeah.
You can't tell my wife. Can't tell my wife this. I got me a new bolt action gun. I got me a
I hope she call in. I hope she call in. I hope she call in.
No, she's gonna call in. Nope, not gonna do it. I'm gonna tell her that it's yours. I'm gonna say Kia said it's okay to get one.
First of all, y'all wives, in that timeout, y'all wives know I'm always on their side. So whatever.
I'm gonna say,
hey,
I'm gonna say,
you
gotta do some, we gotta do some long distance shooting, then, bro.
Yeah. So that's why I want to bring it up, because you know, next time we all get up, I'm bringing this because I need you to show me. I need you to teach me a couple of things. I have one other bolt action. And it's a 22. This is a grown man's bolt action. 308. My first 308 caliber. It's probably, you know, I don't know what to expect when I've shot one 308. It was in the form of a carbine. It wasn't an AR. It was just a regular rifle, semi-auto rifle. But haven't shot a 308. Nothing. I haven't shot anything higher than a 22 out of a bolt action. So I'm very excited, but I can't wait to get it around you guys so that y'all can, you know,
yo, let
me
tell
right
you. Let me tell you the first thing you need to expect, right? So you know the difference in kick as 5.56 and a 7.62, right?
Yep.
5.56 and a 7.62. 7.62 is extremely loud. It don't kick as hard. I mean, it kicks hard, but 7.62 is extremely loud. A 308 and a 6.5 Creedmoor is like being kicked by a mule, like in your face.
Wow, yes.
I'm telling you.
This is my wife's
gun. Telling you.
I bought this for my wife.
Hey, listen.
Oh, my God. She's going to get you, Dwayne. She's going to get you.
Right? Hey, about 5 years ago, though, I was completely sold that on 6.5 Creedmoor being the best long-distance round that was made until I was talking to a friend of mine that is a sniper, and he was like, no, you need to try the 308. That's which is why I purchased a 308 rifle. You've seen the video, right? Zeroing in the 6.5 and the 308.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That 308 is hands down more accurate than that 6.5, my 6.5 Creedmoor. Hands down. So
E, what you're telling me is that this is an incredible financial decision that I made.
Oh, you're going to get it so bad.
what I could tell you, your investment today that you've made, sir, all right, is going to be worth the same amount 10 years from now.
Okay, that's what
you
I like
what
to
saying?
Hear.
Okay. Yeah, 100%.
In other words.
Okay.
It's a financial investment. That's what I tell my wife every time. This is a financial investment. Should we ever need money, babe, I can sell one of these and we'll be okay.
Okay. That's what I want to make sure. You know, I want to make sure that I'm doing the right things. You know,
Dwayne.
Hey, it's the truth, though. It's the truth.
Okay,
because weapons do not depreciate. Firearms don't depreciate in value unless they're a high point. But that's a whole other conversation. All right? Every other brand of firearm keeps their value. So
I don't know, Elliot, because a high point's been worth $100 for like 3 years, 4 years now.
Yeah, and they're robbing everybody that purchases one that high. You're being robbed. You're absolutely being robbed. If you want an ugly gun, I could build you an ugly one and it'd still be prettier than high point. You feel what I'm saying? So yeah, just being robbed. That $100. That gun's now. There isn't a high point that, in my opinion, honestly, worth $70. That's how I feel about them. The trigger pull is too heavy. The weapon is too heavy. I mean, you know, the frame of it is polymer, but the slide is like iron, or lead or something. You feel what I'm saying? It's way too heavy. That's not a firearm you want to take into a self-defense situation. You'll fatigue too fast. You know what I'm saying? It's a waste of money. So, I mean, that's just how I feel.
If there's anybody out there who likes high points, you can call in 845-241-9979 and let us know why you like it. We have a caller. I have a feeling they have something to say. So...
I know it's Sarge.
Welcome to Point Blank, Sarge. How you doing?
Be careful what you wish for. You just might get. Hey, folks, how y'all doing?
How you doing? Good.
How you doing, Sarge?
Oh man, this is too timely. You know, you want to know why? First of all, I got a tale of two triggers I'd like to tell you about, but I am in the process right now of working on for my a good friend of mine, a guy I was in the National Guard with, who moved down here to Georgia. We went to the range over the weekend, and he was, about 3-4 weeks ago, and he was very impressed with the pistol build I did of an AR pistol with a 7.5-inch barrel. I got the receiver from Palmetto State Armory. It is called the Angry Joe. The Angry Joe. It's called an AR-14 multi-caliber Angry Joe Biden, where the safety selector is on the left-hand side. It says, what he say? Where the semi position is, it says dog-faced pony soldier. And where the full auto position would be, on the left side of the weapon where you use a thumb selector, it says full of shit. Remember that argument he got into that guy in Michigan?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a funny video.
All those things from that. And there's a picture of a dog-faced pony soldier on the magazine well right above the AR-14 multi. And on the other side of the receiver, where the fire selector would be pointing to semi on the opposite side, it says memory loss. Where it goes to the semi position, it says dementia. And where the back portion would be the auto position, it says liberal. So you got all that. He was very impressed with this build I did, because I had put in it a rare breed trigger. Now, I don't know if you guys know what the rare breed trigger is or if you ever heard of it, because it's a bit of a controversy
Yeah, they're trying to ban that trigger now.
ATF literally came up with a bureaucratic rule that even though the trigger is what is called a force reset trigger, and the design is really beautifully simple, beautifully constructed, really outstanding in its simplicity and the way it works. I mean, I don't know why I didn't think of this. It's a force reset trigger, and, like, you have to use a AR with a full-auto bolt carrier. And it incorporates a locking bar. And when the hammer rides back over the top part of where normally the disconnector would be in an AR receiver, it forces the trigger forward into a rapid reset. And it has a locking bar that connects with the trigger when the bolt carrier goes fully forward and pushes it forward and enables you to get off shots very rapidly. Remember, each shot is a separate pull of the trigger, but it's so fast, the cyclic rate is effectively, if it was actually a machine gun, somewhere in the neighborhood of 650 to 700 rounds per minute. Literally. I'm not kidding.
Oh, wow.
It is. Now, when I called you, I was putting together this gun for this gentleman because I got all the parts. I just finished it like a half an hour ago. He wanted to make a clone of his, except instead of the rare breed trigger, he ordered this other trigger called Wide Open Trigger from Big Daddy Unlimited. It essentially does the same thing as the rare breed trigger. Now, I am at an undisclosed location in Georgia, in an unincorporated area of Georgia. And I just got, and whenever I rebuild a gun, AR, I got put a blank adapter on it, run blanks through it, and I do a function check. Because it'll cycle with blanks, it'll cycle with anything. And I change the buffer, put in an H3 buffer, standard recoil spring, and all that. As a matter of fact, I was just about to test it out when I realized your show was on. Now, I wouldn't want to test it out live on the air without your permission. But since I'm going to do it anyway, if you give me a permission to, we'll see if it works or not.
Hey, that's
what
I'm
going
for.
You'll be able to hear a wide-open trigger, which is very similar to the rare breed, and you tell me if you could tell the difference between it and an M4.
Gotcha.
Let's hear it, Sarge.
Ready? Now, I want to make sure everybody's
wait,
okay.
Hey,
now,
Sarge. Hey, Sarge. Hey, Sarge. Don't do it yet. Let's introduce this the right way, y'all. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time on Point Blank Radio, we are having our number one. I'm talking about this damn near every single show. He's an official member of our cast. He, first time in an undisclosed location in Georgia. That's the first time I've ever had to say that.
Unincorporated,
location.
Mind you. It's unincorporated.
There you go.
Unincorporated.
The one and only Sarge. He is about to fire a firearm live,
yes,
real time.
The test firing
over
the
to you. Back to you, Sarge. Back to you. Back over to you.
Again, it's a 7.5-inch pistol barrel. It has, of course, a pistol-length gases, which means it's overgassed. But I put an H3 buffer and a stripper recoil spring to kind of slow the cyclic rate down and not batter the parts. Because even a carbine really is kind of overgassed in stock configuration with the gas port. So sometimes it'd be a good idea to maybe put an H buffer, even in a carbine, to kind of slow down the wear on your reciprocating parts. But in a pistol, it's really essential, I think. But anyway, you guys can listen and see how this thing works. You ready?
Ready.
Let's get it.
Okay, here she goes. I think it works perfectly.
It sounds like it to me, too.
It worked perfectly. And that's the first time I fired a wide-open trigger. It works just like a rare breed trigger does. And that was 30 rounds without a hitch.
Wow.
Wow.
That's the stuff.
That's
good
awesome,
Sarge. Yeah.
We need some hand clapping or something. I mean, that's awesome, Sarge.
Yeah, now, you had me put on... I got this little light from, who is this, from UTG. It's a combination white light, laser pointer designator with a palm switch, and it's very compact. I'm kind of impressed by it, and considering how cheap it was, he had me put it on the M-lock rail toward the front of the receiver. It's got a blast deflect can on the front, kind of send some of the noise forward of the muzzle.
Yeah.
And, put a red dot on it. And I'm ready to hand it over to him.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to hand it over to him. Every part is it's a Frankenstein gun. Every part is separate. I mean, it's complete. I just ordered the parts individually.
Well,
good job, Sarge. I'm telling you that you're just a wealth of knowledge, and you have so many skills. And let me give you some hand claps, a round of applause. You just do it all.
Oh, and that's the A3 pistol brace on it, which is another bone of contention with the ATF, apparently.
Yeah, they're going to continue to keep trying to get rid of that, you know, or have do something about that, but. We just got, we got to keep doing our part, man. You know, right, our congressman. We got to keep fighting that because, you know what I mean? SB Tactical has made sure they've met guidelines and what they've been asking them to meet, and then they turn around and they have another problem with something else. So it's just, you know, what they're doing, it's not right.
They're trying to classify these force reset triggers as machine guns, even though they do not meet the definition of machine gun in the National Firearms Act, because each shot is reset and has to be pulled separately in order to cause gun to function.
Right.
Now, they're going to come up with somebody that violates the spirit of the law, but I've never heard that being applied to a criminal case before. I mean, you can do it when you talk about arguing about changing laws, but to say something violates the spirit of the law and you're trying to prosecute somebody for it, that never flies.
That's
right.
So vague and so ambiguous. How can you say the spirit of something?
I know. But, you know, I mean, they don't like the fact. Okay, look, there's an automatic rifle from the First World War called the Show Shot. It was one of the first squad automatic weapons ever built. It's got a very interesting history if you care to look it up on the line. It was a French automatic rifle that was issued to French troops and for the most part, World War One American doughboys who irritatedly had to turn in their fine Lewis machine guns for the show shot, which is actually a stamp, somewhat of a mechanical horror, but very interesting nonetheless. They would work if you used them as they were properly intended to, but they had a slow cyclic rate of fire of 240 rounds per minute. You know, I mean, they just chugged along like chug, even slower than a BAR on the slow rate. Now, that is classified as a machine gun. Jerry Micklick can easily shoot any of his semi-automatic weapons far faster than a show shot can fire. But a show shot legally is a machine gun because that's the way it was built. It's an automatic rifle. It's built as such. But to show you how arbitrary it all is, I guess since people like Jerry Micklick and even a standard AR shooter can shoot semi-automatically faster than at a rate of 240 rounds per minute easily. Any AR shooter can do that with normal reflexes and a normal trigger finger. I guess we'd have to amputate our trigger fingers so they wouldn't consider them as machine guns, huh?
They're going to find something.
That's coming next.
I mean, look what they're trying
with 762 rounds. It's all kind of arbitrary, you know. It really is. The whole thing's really pretty arbitrary. And HF, now we had a victory that this guy David Chipman didn't get confirmed.
Yes, sir.
Did you see that?
Yes, sir. I did.
I thought that was outstanding.
That.
Now, they're going to nominate somebody worse than him because that's just what they do. But at least he got shut down. He was active in anti-gun organizations.
Right, he was.
And the other story, the other trigger I was going to take, did you hear what NYPD did with their NYPD triggers?
There's an NYPD
trigger.
What did
they
do? Huh?
What'd they do?
NYPD trigger?
Well, for about 100 years or so, the NYPD has issued firearms that have a, now get this, whether they're double-action revolvers or single-action revolvers, whatever they were using. 100 years ago, they were using a double-action revolver. I think it was a 32 caliber police special. Then it went to the 38 police special. But anyway, all their issued guns had 13-pound trigger pulls. 13-pound. Yes, that was their policy up until just this month or last month. Finally, they decided to get some sense. And all of their firearms now, the Glocks that they were issuing, have been modified. Even though the striker fired, it still had this heavy spring to allow for a 13-pound trigger pull. Now they decided to cut them down to 5 pounds, which is sensible.
Mm. Oh, wow.
It might account for why some NYPD officers in some gunfights were not hitting the target.
I guess so. Now it's 12-pound pressure.
But they're worried about lawsuits and all that, but now better sense apparently has prevailed, and now they're issuing firearms to recruits out of the police academy, and they're testing their recruits with 5-pound triggers. So apparently they're rectifying that problem.
Wow.
God, I can imagine a 12-pound trigger. Good gracious.
Yeah, 13-pound.
13.
A 13-pound?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, but yeah, I think my buddy would be pleased with his clone, his AR Angry Joe clone. I think it's a rather clever, and kind of a finger in the eye to Joe Biden and his gun-grabbing minions.
The Angry Joe clone. If my wife is listening right now, she probably just got a big old smile across her face when she heard the Angry Joe clone.
If you want to see it, you go to Palmetto State Armory, and I think, I don't know if they have it. They sold them all out last time I checked. But if you're interested in getting the receiver, it used to be available at Palmetto State Armory. I know before the election it was up at mine.
You'll have to look out there and see what they got.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, they got great receivers, man. They're mil-spec receivers, but they got M4, M4A1 clones. that, of course, they don't have the hole for the automatic sear, and the receiver is not inletted to take an automatic disconnector. But nonetheless, they look like an M4 receiver with same markings and everything. M4A1, M4's got the burst selector where the auto is, and the M4A1 has regular auto. But they're clones. Then they sell others with various sayings on them, depending upon your mood, you know, patriotism or, you know, other particular cultural sayings you want to have on it. They got a whole host of different types of receivers, but they're all basically mil-spec, so they pretty much fit in any mil-spec build you care to, you know, do.
100%.
Well, Sarge, I have a question for you. Oh, go ahead, Elliot.
No, you're good. I was just saying, I've done business.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm going to switch the subject. Go ahead.
Now, I was just saying that I've done business with Palmetto State Armies for clients, made purchases and for different builds. I actually built my 6.5 Creedmoor AR platform was a Palmetto State Armory build. So, because that was the only place I could, at the time, I could find an AR-10 style lower. And really good products.
Well, one nice thing about getting a strip receiver and building it is it's sold as any other weapon, and you can go back and forth between a rifle and a pistol as you wish without running afoul of the National Firearms Act.
Yeah, 100. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
But, if it was ever serialized as a rifle, you can't turn it into a pistol legally. Whereas, if it's any other weapon, you can go back and forth between a rifle and a pistol as you wish. Just rebarrel it.
Right.
So, like I said, the brilliant thing about the AR platform is it's so modular and so easy to change different calibers. And by the way, this caliber I did for this gentleman, I did it in a 300 blackout.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's it right there. I like that.
Well, so take a picture of it and email it to me.
Yeah, I will. Sure thing.
I'll
send you my
cool.
whole arsenal. I got about 7 ARs. And the others got binary triggers.
Yes, sir.
Binary triggers.
I want to ask you a question. I want to switch the subject a little bit. So last week we were talking about, about accidentally leaving home without your everyday carry, right? So have you done that without leaving the house without your everyday carry, without your gun on you?
That's something I don't recall ever having done in the last 10 years. I just don't recall.
So let me ask you this. So let's say if you were to just so happen to leave your house without your gun, what would you do? What's your backup plan? Do you have a backup plan in case you ever, if anything were to ever happen or anything like that, do you have a backup plan?
Oh, yeah. I always got tools in my car, and I got a series of crowbars, levers, ratchet wrenches, breaker bars that are very effective at close-range hand-to-hand combat. And you always got your keys you can put in between the fingers of your knuckles. And, I usually have a spray can or something in the car that has a caustic substance in it. So, I got a bunch of different options in case I forget my firearm, which I can't recall having done in over 10 years.
Oh, wow. That was just my question. So, Dwayne, I know you wanted to revisit that question from last week.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like I was saying, I want to definitely give you guys your flowers for really holding it down last week. Sorry, point blankers, that I was unable to join the show last week. I was in the middle of some travel craziness with my family coming back from a family trip. But I'm here now. But while I was, taking care of my family, taking care of business, I did have a chance to chime into the show. And number one, Kia, y'all definitely held it down, like I said at the beginning of the show. But I absolutely love the topic that y'all were going over. Y'all was talking about, it was a very, very important topic. And I know it was, it started with E saying that he had left the house without his concealed. But the And you know, a lot of times people may think, like, oh, my God, that's a bad thing, and, oh, how dare you, blah, 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 blah. If you carry, you should always carry. But the reality is sometimes you go places where you can't even take your conceal with you. So what's different?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I work in the field all the time. Definitely not what E do on any level. I work for, a tech company, and, you know, I work going from store to store. And when I go into these stores, I can't take my firearm with me. So the question that I got from what you guys went over last week was, when you're in a situation where you might have left your home without your concealed, sometimes we rush out, right? Or if you're in a situation where you have to enter a building or go onto a premises, such as a federal building, or maybe a school or a hospital, or just out of respect to someone else, you go into their home and you don't take your firearm, are you prepared? What is your plan, if you have one, for if, God forbid, a situation happens? And I would challenge all our listeners, you know, call in, guys, 845-241-9979, 845-241-9979. Because, again, we're not always in a situation to where we can have our gun on our side. So, E, I know you, before we started the show, you was kind of going over something that, you know, that you came up with. So go ahead and share that with our listeners.
Yeah, definitely. So after I did that, I actually did it again, and because the time in between football practice and picking up my kids from school is kind of hectic. I'm trying to get the kids, trying to get them in the house, trying to get them settled so that I can get ready for practice. You know what I'm saying? And it's about a 20-minute ride away. So that's usually when I, you know what I'm saying, I'll put stuff down or take stuff off or whatever the case may be because I'm in the house. And it's just it's a habit that I take my firearm off. You know what I'm saying? I always like to keep it close, but I'll take it off because I'm changing clothes or need to take a shower or whatever the case may be. So after it happened, I ended up doing it the very next day again. And I was just like, yo, what is going on? Like, I have too much going on if I'm not thinking about this. You know what I'm saying? So it made me stop and come home and think about creating myself a checklist, a reminder on my phone. Like, hey, listen, like, you got a whole lot going on if you're not thinking about this. And this is, and you know how important this is. You know what I'm saying? You're way too distracted now. So I created myself a checklist where, where am I, do I have my keys? Do I have my firearm? Do I have my folding blade? Do I have my tactical pen? You know what I mean? And then, of course, because I'm most times I'm heading to practice or I'm going somewhere, do I have my shopping list or my whistle or, you know what I'm saying? Like, do I have everything that I need? Because I am getting a little older, you know what I mean? And I am quite busy. So I feel like, I need to create things that will help me remember. And I know that too, like some people be like, oh, that should be important. But listen, when you have kids and a lot of people can attest, they might not admit it, but they can attest to this. Like you have kids and you're doing things, especially either your kids or with other kids, that becomes, you tend to forget a lot of things. I mean, I've walked out the house, got up to the car and didn't even remember the keys. You get what I'm saying? So I know like, yeah, I gotta go back in the house and get the keys. You know what I mean? So, but, my thing is, like, that's a part of my lifeline. Like, that's a part of me, right? I need my keys. I need my wallet. You see what I'm saying? I need these things. If I'm becoming so distracted now because of all that I'm doing, I need reminders. You know what I'm saying? Because that can't get left. So, whether I'm putting it with my, again, like I said, I try to keep it close. And when I say I try to keep it close, if I'm downstairs, I want it downstairs. And though I have, multiple weapons downstairs, my EDC is the one I reach for all the time. Why? Because that's the one I shoot the best. You see what I'm saying? That's just
right.
The one I dry fire with all the time. That's my right hand. Like, I'm just not going to lie to you. I love all my other firearms, but my M&P 2.0, that's my girl. You feel me? That's just me telling the truth. You see what I'm saying? I'm always going to reach for that one. So, but that was what I had to go through. I had to think about that.
No, I love that.
What about you, Dwayne? Do you have a backup plan?
I do have a backup plan, and my backup plan is, and this is actually what I was going to go into next. My backup plan is you learn how to maneuver without one if you have to, you know. And what that means, what that will mean for me, is creating a plan that includes the exclusion of your firearm. If you get what I mean, you know, some people we. And I say we broadly. Let me not even say we. There's a lot of people out there that they go out and they get their firearm, they get their gun, and they all of a sudden it puts a battery in their backs. So now, God forbid anything happened, the first thing they want to grab is their gun. You know, the mindset of avoidance
right.
is so important. Even if you have your gun and you know how to use it to your best ability, you're a marksman 200, whatever you want to call it, avoidance is still the key, right? And it's even more so when you don't have your firearm. And what if you can't avoid a situation? You should know, you should learn how to defend yourself with a firearm, but it's also equally important to learn how to defend yourself without a firearm. Because what if you're in a situation to where you have your firearm and you become overpowered and now you don't have your firearm? Or do you just give up and stop fighting? Do you know how to defend yourself? Do you know how to fight? Do you take up any kind of mixed martial arts? Do you know anything, you know? So that is my backup plan, is to know how to maneuver without one, because there's going to be times,
yeah.
realistically, that you have to maneuver without one. Even if you have one, like
right.
I said, you can have one. I'm not the biggest guy. But if I get into something with Elliot and I can't draw my firearm in time, and for some reason he's able to get my firearm and knock it to the ground, again, I have to know how to function in that environment. So that's my backup plan. What about you, Kia? What's your backup plan?
Well, you know, I come from a line of military men. My uncle used to always teach us, because before we could even carry guns and things like that and legally, he would always tell us, especially on flights, is when, you know, things were happening with the flight situation and they were cracking down right after 9/11 and things like that. So he always told us to keep pencils and ink pens. And so
yep.
I always keep pencils and ink pens in my purse or somewhere in my car. And he used to tell us all the time, go for eyes, ears, neck, you know, areas with those pens and pencils. And he tells, you know, 3 pounds of pressure on the nose, 3 pounds of pressure to remove your ear, you know, just something to distract someone so you can get away or do something to get them before they, you know, get you or something like that. So those are things that my uncle, he didn't teach me, like, kick somebody. Or he said, yeah, hey, just do this. People are not expecting it. So I think that the element of surprise is always, he taught us the element of surprise is always the best method. So no one's going to expect a woman to, you know, to rip your ear off or to, you know, hit you in the nose or pull an ink pen out, you know, or something like that. So in those situations where it's life or death and I don't have my gun with me, then that was, you know, that was some methods that I was raised on.
Well, you got me to thinking when you mentioned, you know, when you go in a place where you're not allowed to carry or you're respecting someone's personal space and they don't want you having a firearm in it. You know, one thing that in situations like that, when I go into the post office, for instance, and I have to leave my firearm in my vehicle or any other situation
right.
comparable to that, I start looking around for an improvised weapon in the environment I'm in. Is there maybe a stanchion around if I have to use it, I can use it? A pole, a broom, a mop, left lane? Is there something I can throw? Where's the cover? Where's the concealment? I mean, it's kind of do that as a habit. But when I have to leave weaponry behind, and like you said, I carry a folding knife regularly too, always. So I always have a folding knife and a firearm. But let's say I got to leave both those behind because of regulations, usually in federal buildings. Then I look around for some sort of improvised weapon I can use should I have to in an emergency. Because usually you'd be surprised at the number of things that are laying around, particularly weapons that are standoff weapons that are like poles or something like that. You'd be amazed at what you might see and then wasn't even thinking about it, you're looking for it.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a reason why the Army issues every soldier, not only with a rifle, they give them a bayonet too, remember?
Yeah.
There's a reason for it.
I know. I know for me, anytime I go anywhere, I don't like to park. I don't have a favorite area to park, if that makes sense. If I know that I'm going to Walmart and I'm going to the grocery department of Walmart, I want to park close to that entrance. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And I know people that are they'll go to Walmart. If you go with your friend, they park in the same area every time. And I'm like, man, we going all the way to the mechanical part. Like, that's in the back. And don't you think we should drive around to the other side, you know? Because my thought is, if I'm in a situation where I'm, you know, hey, I just say I'm shopping, I got caught off guard, and, you know, my thought pattern is going to be, yo, escape and evade. I got to be able to get out and get to my vehicle quickly. You feel me?
Right.
Or if I'm in the post office, I'm not going to park, you know what I'm saying, at the 'cause where we have our parking at our post office, you have to walk in, and you're walking probably a good, you know what I'm saying, maybe 50 yards before you actually get to the where the desk is that you get service. So I don't like that at all. You know what I'm saying? I don't like that at all. I don't like to park at IHOP on the side and walk around to the front door. If I have to do that, then I'm going to another IHOP. You see what I'm saying? That's just Elliot's thought pattern on it. Like, no, I need to be able to, if I'm going to park on the side, it better be next to the emergency exit. You know what I'm saying? And then when I go inside to eat, I want to sit next to the emergency exit because I need to be able to get out quickly. You feel me? So those are things that I think about if I'm without, you know what I'm saying? If I have to go to the school and, you know, we have a meeting with the teacher or we have, you know, a program that they're doing, I'm thinking about how we're going to get out. You know, if something pops off, hey, where's the nearest exit? I know that there's they have a stage. Most times there's an exit in the back of the stage. Most times, you know what I'm saying, there's an emergency exit down the steps in my son's school, through the cafeteria, wherever. I'm always thinking of all of those things, but I'm even more alert when I've only done this twice, but I was even more alert without it. Like, the moment I realized that here I am halfway to Chatham, you know, which is like a 20-minute drive, and I don't have my M&P. Like, oh, gosh. Now I'm looking at everybody. Joke, if a cat pull up too close at the stoplight, I'm looking to see, you know what I'm saying? I'm ready to punch the gas. Like, oh, God. You know what I'm saying? Because now I'm like, yo, okay, I'm out here naked. You know what I mean? Because in my PT short, I mean, in my PT short, but in my my basketball shorts, carrying my folder knife, it's kind of heavy. It doesn't fit the same. So I usually have it right there on the dashboard. You feel me? But even still, when I get out of the vehicle, it's so many things that was going through my mind those 2 days. But even still, before that, I'm always thinking about, if I'm going to electronics, I need to park as close to that area as I can. If I'm going to get food, I'm not going to park just because it's the first parking spot I get. No, I'm just not going to do that. If I'm going to Sears, I'm parking in front of Sears. I'm not going to go to just, you know what I'm saying, to Dunham's, park there, and then walk to Sears. Like, I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? That's just how I think. So, and I don't know why that is, but that's just what I choose to do. It has to be, you know, that I can be ready and available. I can get out.
And I think
Elliot,
really is. Go ahead.
Thank you. Elliot, there was something I wanted to bring up with you that you were mentioning earlier, and I forgot, but I'd like to ask you about it now if I could. When you were talking about gas blocks and builds, I think the best gas block that is not adjustable is the standard A2 sight gas block that you put on military weapons. However, the problem with it, with that big triangular front sight post, you can't put it under a free float handguard. You know, it extends all the way down the barrel. But the reason it's the best is because it's pinned in place with a taper pin. And, you know, it's not going to move once you put the taper pin in there. I mean, it's secure. You know, one thing about set screws, even when you use Loctite, you dimple the bottom of the barrel. What I do is I take a jig for the barrel I got, and I always drill a divot in the bottom of the barrel so I can insert a taper pin to ensure that the gas box stays aligned. It's not going to come out of alignment.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I
don't know. I just wonder what you think about that with regard to the bill as opposed to a set screw type of deal, which I find to be adequate. Most of the time they'll work good, but if it's a weapon I know I got to rely on my life on, I'd rather have one that's held in with taper pins with the bottom of the barrel relieved in order to accept the taper pin after you ream it for a taper pin.
Yeah, I don't really like, and this is just my preference, I don't like taper pins. I use roll pins instead because they give me they're easier to remove, easier if I want to change up anything. Taper pins, especially like if you're working on it for the first time, you know, metal it expands with heat. It shrinks with when it cools. Taper pins give me a hard time taking them out, so I changed over to roll pins. But pretty much they do the same thing. With the gas block, I like on the A1s or A2s. I like that spacer that's in the front. You know what I'm saying? It's either triangle or it's circular. Because it allows you to line up the gas block, perfect as possible with the actual gas exit port. You feel me? So I do that when people are making that change and they're going to a free float and they're, you know what I'm saying, and they're getting a low profile or gas block. That my thought pattern is always kind of like, well, you might want to measure the distance between the hole and the rim of the barrel, so you understand, like, hey, there has to be a little bit of space, and I can't think of the nomenclature right now, but it has to be a little bit of space so that it will align properly. And how honestly, when I first started building, how I discovered this, of course, was with the 300 blackout, because you know they were notorious at first for not cycling properly, you know what I'm saying? And so what I had to learn, I did all of the, oh, I'm just going to get an adjustable gas block. I did everything I could, and nothing seemed to work right until I put the A1 or the gas front sight on there with the spacer. I haven't had a single problem with that firearm since. And I was like, man.
I see what you mean.
So it has to be.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Now, my understanding is the three basic lengths of gas for AR, you got the pistol length, you got the mid length, you got the carbine length, but then you got all these different lengths of barrel. And what, you know, as you know, what that affects is the dwell time. You have pressure while the gas system is pressurized, and of course, it's affected by the different lengths of gas tubes and different lengths of barrels, and the positioning of the gas port with relationship to where, you know, the bullet is exiting the barrel. So all that stuff you got to take into account, you know, when you're doing your build, so you get the dwell time right with the length of the barrel. You're not either over gas or under gas, because over gassing, as you well know, puts accelerated wear on the reciprocating parts. Under gassing leads to reliability problems, and you got to find a happy medium. So
yeah,
you got to kind of
that's where I am with the 6.5. My 6.5 Creedmoor, I believe I it's over gas. I'm gonna have to adjust the gas tube because I have an adjustable gas tube on that. And you know what I'm saying, because I know you the easiest way, folks, to identify that you might be over gas or under gas is if you're under gas, it's not gonna cycle properly. If you're over gas, you can tell by how the actual shells are ejecting from the round. If they're ejecting too far forward, that's too much gas. They should be ejecting closer to a 45 degree and back. So that's something too.
So Elliot and Sarge, I'm gonna let y'all exchange numbers so y'all can talk about this. Cause we gotta talk about Stacy.
We gotta talk about who? We gotta talk about Stacy.
We gotta talk about some Stacy. Okay.
For those of y'all that don't know what you're talking about, for those listeners out there right now that don't know what they're talking about, guess what? There's this awesome company, I think it's number one in North Carolina, Point Blank, and they're offering a class. Hit her up. Go to Instagram, join that class, and hopefully the next class is going to set out quick when she posts this next class. And we're going to have Elliot there. He don't know it yet. We're going to have Elliot there.
He's going to definitely be there.
Yeah, he just don't know it for sure yet.
And we're going to get Sarge there, too. Look, we're going to get Sarge down here, too.
Sarge is going to show up via Skype or via Zoom with, like, a blurred-out face or something like that, you know? Or he's going to come to close location. But folks, seriously, we kind of started going down a rabbit hole because we just love what we do. And we y'all got a little taste of advanced building when it comes down to, you know, building your own AR. Not an assault rifle, an AR, all right? I wanted to throw some stuff out to y'all. I know we got probably about 24 minutes, and there's a couple things. You know, I always come with the daily news, with the weekly news. I got a couple things that I wanted to kind of throw out there that I know we're probably going to have to segue back into the next show because we don't have a lot of time. But, you know, there's been a lot of changes, folks. There's been a lot going on in the last couple of days, last couple of weeks, last couple of months, and there's a lot, and a lot of things are showing. So I wanted to kind of throw a couple things, get your thoughts, and then go on to the next one. All right? And I know, Sarge, you're on a good one. So, number one, when I went out, my family and I, we went out to California. And we all know California is a beautiful, beautiful state with all the best laws and all the best things, right? I can't even say that without laughing. Guess what? The city of San Francisco, they either passed it or they're getting ready to pass it. This one is crazy, y'all. So San Francisco wants to give those who may be considered violent people $300 a month to not shoot anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Are you serious?
And here's another part. I'm very serious. And here's the crazier part. There's a spiff on top of that. If you go good for a couple months, it goes up to $500 as a bonus. So while me, the law-abiding citizen, I get penalized for having a firearm to protect myself from these criminals, but the criminals are getting money to not hurt me. So instead of locking them up, they're saying, you know what, we're going
to
pay you to not shoot someone, and a couple months go by, we're going to give you even more. So it really pays
to
be a criminal
in
the city of San Francisco.
That is crazy. That is
crazy.
That is insane. That is the most absolute craziest thing I have ever heard in my life. That is crazy, y'all.
It's almost crazy as Lori Lightfoot wanting to sue the gangs for murdering people.
Yes.
Listen to this, right?
It says San Francisco will begin paying people to not shoot other people. The program will be called the Dream Keeper Fellowship. and it's likely to be dubbed Cash for Criminals. And we'll pay.
This is real, yo. Yeah.
This is real.
Just say only Democrats come up with ideas like this. Only they do. I'm sorry. No one else comes up with ideas this insane.
Yep.
Oh, God.
So locking them up is not enough?
No, it's not, ma'am. We don't want to lock them up. It's called the Dream Keeper Fellowship. And it is born from the SFPD data showing that more than half of all San Francisco gun killings involve the same 12 criminal groups or gangs.
So more than half of San Francisco gun killings involved the same 12 criminal groups and gangs. Not really, Joe Smoe.
As a former cop, let me ask a question. If you got that much information and that much connection, is there anything on God's green earth that forbids you from getting a RICO predicate and going after these clowns federally?
Hello, that's what I was about to ask you, Farge. You have that much intelligence and you can't, and you're going to pay them instead of, I mean, where are you going to send the check? Where are you going to send the check? Well, how about where are you going to send the check? How about go meet them there? I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, you know what's so crazy, yo?
RICO case.
You know what's so crazy, yo, is that when I was growing up, I used to always hear older folks say, oh, my God, this is what you use my tax dollars for. And I'm like, get over it, tax dollars. Because I was a young, dumb kid. But now I'm older, much older. This is something that us tax-paying people should be complaining about. This is our tax money right here, y'all. So my taxes, the taxes I'm paying, pays the criminal, these identified gangs, $300 a month each to not come. You know, this is like you ever seen a movie, and I know this happens in real life, but I can only say what I see, and I see it in the movies where you pay those bad guys to not come destroy your store for protection. So I'm paying these guys are being paid. I'm paying them every month for protection.
There's a name for that, Dwayne, when they pay the people to not come. Do you know what that name is? You know, it has a name.
Hit us with it. What is it? Give us
your
name.
Dane Gold or Tribute. It's called Dane Gold. You know, when the Vikings were raiding the English coast and the kings didn't want to send military or they had an inadequate military to deal with the Viking raids, they paid Dane Gold, they called it, to keep the Vikings from raiding their homes and murdering the priests and whatnot in the monasteries.
And guess what?
Okay.
So far, they have eventually ramped up to as many as 200 to 300 participants.
Dwayne, that's called extortion.
I would have thought they'd have a couple thousand.
Okay, just want to make sure I throw it out there.
It's extortion. Yep. So that is story number one, listener. Story number one. Let me give you all story number two. This story is coming out of upstate New York, right? And this was six days ago, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's sometime last week this happened. But it didn't make no news, but it made Facebook news. So upstate New York, there's a deputy mayor, Mr. Brian Downey. Mr. Brian Downey. He's the deputy mayor of Ermont, New York. And he was taken into custody for purchasing a rifle suppression device over the internet. So he went and bought one of them solvent tracks on the internet. So he bought a solvent track to turn into a suppressor, right? Allegedly, you can do that. We don't know what you're talking about if ATF is listening, but that's what he did. when they searched his home, guess what they found, y'all? So we're in New York. This is upstate New York, where ARs are illegal, high-powered rifles are illegal. They found 13 illegal suppressors and 16 unregistered assault weapons. And this is, I'm reading their quote, assault weapons. So those are ARs, including a short barrel rifle and sawed-off shotgun. So this mayor deputy of New York has a mini arsenal. And the crazy part is, his closet, they found it inside of a room, and they're dubbing it the gun room, right? That's what they call it. That's what they're calling it, the gun room, according to the arresting officers or whatever. And when you look at a picture of this room, it looks like what I have in my safe, and it looks like what probably all of us got in our safe. But this is upstate New York,
right?
But when I tell you this dude, the hypocrisy is real, because him and his team was anti-gun. You know, they'll be the first ones to come after you, right? But here's the twist to this, right? Guess what else they found? They found a bunch of fake FBI. I can't make this shit up. FBI badges.
Oh, I know God. You lied.
They found a lockbox. Nope. I swear to God, I'm gonna send it to you after the show. Look it up, folks. Look it up. They found a bunch of illegal solvent traps or illegal suppressors, and it looks like over probably 24 FBI badges and FBI ID cards for different agencies.
Oh, man.
They say they don't know what he was planning on doing with them.
They was watching him.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, they was watching him big time.
They were getting ready to go down the Capitol and start an insurrection or something.
Yeah.
What in the world was he planning?
Oh, yeah.
He probably locked people up for having firearms, right?
That's what I'm saying. His team was big on, oh, my gosh, this gun, that gun, that gun, it's illegal, and here he is having a mini arsenal. So it's like, you know, who do we believe? You know, the hypocrisy is real, y'all. Now, you just talked about the Capitol, right, Sarge? That brings me to story number three. So it says that Capitol Hill neighbors brace for the September 18th rally. So I don't know if y'all have heard about there's going to be a scheduled rally in the Capitol again September 18th.
Yeah, we've heard about it.
I'm sure you can't make yourself up. The news is already they're getting pulled on their heartstrings right now. That they've spoken to a bunch of people that live around the Capitol, the state Capitol building, which is D.C., y'all, and they're saying that they're moving out of the area for that particular day because of what happened earlier this year, and they don't want to see their family heirlooms burnt to the ground, or they don't want to be hurt, so they're moving away because they just want to be alert. And this article is just talking about how sad it is that all these people have to relocate for that particular weekend. And I believe September 18th is this weekend, if I'm not mistaken, right? We're the 15th
today. Yeah, that's Saturday.
Saturday? So
yeah,
we have another rally. There is another rally, folks, in the Capitol Hill, and the neighbors are bracing for that. So stay tuned for more on that. Watch your news. And here's another one. And like I said, folks, we cannot make this stuff up. This one is a little bit different of a story. I kind of want to hear what you guys think on this one, and I'll end it there. So it says a concealed carrier shot trying to stop the armed robbery in 7-Eleven. So this happened in Missouri. Yep, in Grandview, Missouri. So it was overnight. This regular guy was in the grocery 7-Eleven, and somebody came in and stuck up 7-Eleven, and this armed civilian decided to take matters into his own hand and pulled out his gun. Gunfire was exchanged, and he got shot, and he was hospitalized. He is expected to survive. But that's one of those things that I always talk to my students about. What is your thoughts on this? You know, do you jump in? What do you do if you're in a corner store and you're behind aisle number two and someone comes in and they're sticking up the place and it's an armed robbery? What do you do as a civilian, as a country you carry, you carry a firearm? Do you intervene? Do you let it happen until you feel threatened? What do you do? I'll go around the horn. What would you all do?
Well, the first thing you better know is what the laws in the state that you're using that firearm
in.
That's
right.
The first thing you ought to know.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
The first thing you ought to know is what the laws on the use of deadly force by a citizen are in your state. In many states, the only justification for using deadly force is an imminent deadly threat to yourself or someone else. In some states, just the fact that someone is doing an armed robbery, they will consider that not necessarily grounds to shoot them if they're not pointing it at anyone at the time you pull the trigger. Depends on the state.
Yes, very true.
So
very
you
got to
know. But let's assume it's a normal state where people consider someone announcing an armed robbery and using it in a manner to cause people to be reasonably alarmed that they're going to use it to commit the robbery. Let's assume that that state is not going to prosecute you for taking reasonable actions to stop it. Okay, state like that, first thing you got to say to yourself, do I think this guy is about to kill anyone or not, or injure anyone or not? And again, that is a presumption that is safe to make, given the fact he comes in a tumultuous manner, announces an armed robbery, starts waving gun all around the place. Now, second of all, can you take the shot reasonably without endangering yourself or anyone else? Is your background clear? Does he have any Confederates? Have you checked to see if there are any Confederates who are either with him or could possibly be lurking to give him cover and backup? There's a whole host of considerations you've got to take into account before you intervene, because you might do more harm than good. Then on the other hand, you might save somebody's life. That is a judgment call. That's why it is so incumbent upon every armed citizen who says to myself, if I have the opportunity, I plan to intervene. Then you, dear citizen, had better do every bit of studying you can for tactical encounters and to prepare yourself for that day when you might do it, because there's an infinite host of variables that come into every scenario.
That's right. You're right.
Yeah. I think you're hitting on it, Sarge.
Because I tell my classes that just because you carry a firearm doesn't make you invincible. So you engage someone shooting someone, if you engage them, that doesn't mean you're not going to get hit by a firearm. That doesn't mean you're not going to get hurt in the process. So you need to weigh those options. Like Sarge said, how do you know you don't have someone else lurking? So, you know, you got to calculate those risks. Can you get out? Can you get out of the store and maybe call 911 or whatever? But to engage someone else, you're not invincible. You're just not.
Yeah,
remember,
I always
tell
my students that there's one thing.
Police officers, and they don't know who's who. They got to sort everything out, and they might make a split decision on you, and you're the good guy.
Right.
You guys remember that case from a couple of months ago?
Nothing about concealed carry permit holders. So I believe in being like a physician. Take the physician's motto into account. First of all, do no harm. And then you go from there.
Right.
Well, Dwayne, what you were saying about the guy who saved the cop's life, and then they rolled up on him, and then they ended up shooting him, and he was really the person that saved the cop's life.
There
you know,
you
the police, they don't know.
The one that saved the cop's
They don't know.
That's exactly what happened, you know, and a lot of times, you know, I was talking to a class about that same situation, and I was like, you know, they were very shocked to hear me say he did no wrong. You know, it was very shocked for me to say that the cop was not in the wrong. It was like, what are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, listen, it wasn't an unfortunate act. Absolutely. No, nobody should have to live with that. A life was lost. You know, in that moment, that gentleman, that he don't know how much people he saved because he died doing what he did. But I always tell my students, before you intervene, whether it's a situation that you have to defend yourself or defend somebody else, you have to ask yourself two things. Are you prepared to die or go to jail over what you're about to do? Because that is a real thing. Whether you're about to save someone's life or you're about to step to someone for stepping on your shoes, ask yourself, die or go to jail. And if you answer yes to those things and you proceed, whatever the outcome ends up being, you have to live with that outcome. You have to.
Yeah.
But then you also have to ask yourself, can you live with yourself if you don't intervene, you know?
Yeah.
And if your answer is yes and you don't intervene and the outcome is, you know, God forbid somebody else died and you could have helped, you have to live with that. So whatever decision you come to terms with, you have to live with that. Only you can. Like Sarge, you said it right. It's a decision you got to make. It's a decision you have to make. And you are the only one that can live with that decision. So.
No, I have gone down on a good guy who had captured an armed robber, and I didn't know what was going on. Thankfully, the gentleman did everything I told him to do, and I was able to sort it out, and he turned out to be the hero. But I'm just saying, Cops don't know who's who, and you can't expect them to know.
Yeah.
You start drawing a gun in your hand, and you're responding to a man with a gun call, you just might get lit up. And it's going to be it could be a perfectly reasonable response on the part of the officer.
Well, I told you guys during Firearm Safety Awareness Month, I partnered with the Raleigh Police Department, and the guy brought the slide the game. And so what we had to do as a class is select, look at the picture, and he gave us like 60 seconds to determine which guns were fake and which ones were real. No one got it right. So it's like, so think about it. We had 60 whole seconds to look at it, right? And we couldn't get it. So, but here it is, the cops, you're supposed to roll up, right, assess the situation where gunfire has gone off, things are going on, and you got to assess whether this person is holding a real gun or a fake gun and who's what, who's good, who's bad, and who's ever. You know, so mistakes happen in situations like that. We had 60 whole seconds and we couldn't figure it out. And they were real guns that were confiscated.
Look, shooting at Tamir Rice in Ohio. Now,
yeah.
That kid was carrying a replica long slide 1911-type pistol, and I took a look at what they showed at the press conference. At the ranges, those officers saw that 1911 in his waistband. I carried a 1911 A1 for 18 months in Vietnam, and I guarantee you I couldn't have told the difference at that range. It looked like a long slide 1911-type pistol. And there are such
That was definitely unfortunate. That was definitely unfortunate about what happened. But in a way, you're right, because of the simple fact that you don't know. You know what I'm saying? You just don't know. And that's the thing. It's like, and then that I have to circle back to us as parents. You know, if my kid wants to, she's in all she sees. She wants to march around this yard or in my line of sight. You know, yeah, okay, but at a park somewhere? No. Alone? By herself? No. We're not doing that because that's not the world we live in right now. So
I saw a gun the other day that was painted up, a Glock, a real Glock. It was painted up like a Lego block thing. It was a real thing, and it looked like it was made out of Legos. Now, it was a real Glock. It was fully functional, but it was made up to look like it was a toy.
Yeah,
very easy to paint a yellow tip on a real gun in hopes it might delay an officer for a second or two, and you get the drop on the cop. So even then, I'm not going to assume it's not a real firearm just because there's an orange tip on the barrel.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of these things that
go on are just in unfortunate situations, and, you know, it's like, we would like to blame, right? We want to blame, but it's just unfortunate the situations that that we find ourselves in. Even now, the state of the world that we live in right now, it's just certain things that I'm not going to go into a war zone saying, "Hey guys, you want to my name is Kia and I work at Point Blank." It's just certain things you just don't do, right? So you just gotta plan accordingly, because regardless of what we think the world should be, it's just not the way it is anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's just not that way anymore.
Yeah.
So we got 90 seconds 100%. Left. So, Sarge, we always enjoy you. We always appreciate your input. We love you on the show. When you're not, I already said, if you're not on the show today, I was going to call you. So I'm glad you're on the show today. We're going to keep up with you. We really appreciate you and your contribution that you give to our show. Of course, Dwayne and Elliot, you guys are always, near and dear. I appreciate you guys for, what you should provide for Point Blank as well. So thank y'all.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. But you taxpayers paid a lot of money over the years to train me, and I figure I ought to share that my knowledge that y'all paid for with the public at large.
Well, we appreciate you, son. Definitely. And E, I know you're still doing what you're doing with those Marines. We definitely appreciate you. And I really appreciate the fact in the last couple of seconds that you it's a financial decision, folks, that I got that rifle. Beth, just go listening. He told me it's
he's saying
financial.
That because he about to get off the phone. He's about to get off the phone now, so
financial.
We got to go say
all right, that's good. We got
10
seconds. And Kia says, okay. Babe, I love you. I love you, baby.
No, I did not.
Everyone, we love you all.
Have a good night. Have a good night, everybody.